Welcome to the fifth episode of So We Heard, an informal coffee break chat series. I'm your host, Ragini, assistant producer on Can You Hear Us? Monica and Madeira started the Can You Hear Us podcast when they were master's students at LSC. They wanted to create a safe space for BiWalk to share their experiences. The podcast has grown leaps from this initial idea while the essence remains intact. So We Heard, like our parent series, is a space for BiWalk to share their narratives. We wanted to create a space where we could discuss and understand anything related to international development without the pressure of having to sound intelligent while doing it. I am very excited for today's guest because we have Doris, a researcher on Can You Hear Us, and also So We Heard's lead researcher. Hi, Doris.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited for our discussion. Doris, you've picked such an interesting topic, and I would love to find out why you wanted to discuss it. But before that, the So We Heard team acknowledges that we do not represent all women or femmes of color, and we can only speak from our experiences and perspectives. But we strive to include all women and femmes of color in our conversations. We are always open to feedback from our listeners. So, Doris, we are discussing China's three-child policy today. When we were brainstorming ideas, you said that this was something you had studied in a social policy seminar, and that's why you wanted to discuss it. But that got me thinking, you are currently a uni student, so I'm sure you have many seminars with many different topics and many different themes. But what about this particular topic piqued your interest?
Yes, I definitely have so many seminars, but I would say, yeah, this three-child policy, because I'm from China, so it is a topic that is very close to my heart, and it's also a very controversial topic among the public. And when I am taking the social policy class, I brought this case to our class to discuss. Okay. Right. And I also, because we have a project for like presentation and present some like development in the news. So I think this could be a good example for like social policy and development, especially we learn a concept called developmental state, which closely related to East Asian tigers. Like China is definitely not included in these tigers, but I often, when I learned it or like read it over, I can like constantly remind me how it's similar to China. Yeah. One of the key characteristics, I think you also know, it's social policy subordinates to economic policy in these states. Right. And I guess it's kind of like a Asian culture things that we all strive to earn more money, and then we want to have our economic growth first, prioritizing it instead of like other social provisions, etc. So when I heard of like three-child policy is was announced, I see this policy have a very strong emphasis on economic benefit, I would say, because it's like how it might brought this to macro scale. Like if we have more population, then there can be an increase in productivity, and then thus the economic growth and national development. But I can, as a sociology student, I guess, and also studying social policy, I think it overlooks a lot of impacts that it might bring to the household and individuals, you know, specific groups of people. And then I specifically consider like how it might impact women, how it will worsen gender inequality, basically. Yeah.
That's so interesting. It also kind of takes me back to my time in uni, because I remember always having case studies from India. And again, I think in that way, India and China are similar, that you can almost always find a case study, especially if it's sociology or politics or social policy. There is a case study to be found. So we're in the same boat there. I have many an Indian case studies that I've presented in my seminars. But before we discuss this topic further, I think we should contextualize it a little bit for our listeners. So beginning in 1979, China implemented the one-child policy, which stipulated that a couple could only have one child, resulting in a declining new population and a rapidly aging society. In order to slow down the trend of population aging, in 2015, the CCP officially launched the two-child policy, which relaxed the birth restrictions. However, the policy did not result in the expected wave of births, and the pregnancy rate among young women continued to show a record low decline, experiencing a third consecutive year of decrease. In 2021, the Chinese government introduced a three-child policy, replacing the previous two-child policy. It allows couples to have three children without any penalty, and this change responded to the country's declining birth rates. The latest census revealed only 12 million newborns in 2020, the lowest number of births since a famine in the 1960s. And I feel like that is where we are currently at. Am I correct, Doris?
Yes. But apart from that, I'd like to add a little update regarding the progress of the three-child policy. Yes. So far, the policy has appeared to be not very effective because by the end of 2022, the population natural increase is -0.6%. So the population has seen a decrease of 850,000 from the end of 2021. So it's the first time in six decades that China's population experienced a decrease. So before that, when we see the problem, it's a decrease in rate, basically. So it's still increasing, but at a slower rate.
Yeah.
But now it's at a decreasing, like a negative rate. So basically, from the statistic, the three-child policy is not achieving what it's supposed to do, which is increasing the population. Regarding the opportunity of this policy, I would say there is definitely some hope for improving the aging population and promoting economic development if more children can enter the future labor market. But the economic growth is based on the prerequisite that there are more children born and can enter the labor market. But what I want to ask today is, can the three-child policy be effective? Why or why not? And personally, I have a very strong doubt about the effectiveness from my position as a young Chinese woman.
Yeah.
So since the announcement of the policy, there has been a lot of discussion around it. And what concerns me the most is how it would worsen gender equality. Having many children will very likely, you know, amplify informal employment and unemployment among women. Mm-hmm. So I found a study in 2020 reported that 45% of women experience adverse employment effect, including income loss, losing opportunities for training, demotion, and even being forced to resign due to pregnancy or childcare responsibilities. And some company, they might even avoid enrolling like female employees to save cost for their maternal leave, because in China, maternity leave is about 98 days, while paternity leave is about 15 days. So there are like a huge difference.
Wow. Yeah, and that's a huge difference. Huge.
Right? They said the paternity leave is for like to accompany the pregnant woman, like, but the rest of it, women need to take care of themselves, basically.
Of course. And the 15 versus 98, that's ridiculous.
And when you think from like the company's perspective, comparing to paying like 15 days salary, like men are leaving, while in comparison to 98 days, the cost they need to make without any like inputs to their companies, then the company will definitely like prefer male employees over female employees. And you will see in a lot of interviews, like job interviews, the company will directly ask the female that whether if they have a boyfriend, are they getting, are they planning to get married recently? Are they going to have babies? And how many kids do they have? You know, a lot of private questions, but they all need to ask it. And then oftentimes women are discriminated because of these like uncertainties that companies sees. And but I think the government is also aware of that issues. It's like widely discussed on the internet. And then government is aware, they want to make some change. So they said, oh, we will ban you from asking those questions. But I don't know like if the women are still being asked now. Yeah. So yeah, it's almost inevitable for women to be affected due to these like possible role of becoming a wife, a mother, a child carer. The traditional gender roles and practices force women to be primarily responsible for childcare. As I just said, like maternity leave are much longer. They need to take care of themselves and their babies, and they are expected to do so, and subordinate, sacrifice their career aspiration to these family obligations. Another interesting study that I found conducted in 2015 by Renmin University in China showed that among families with a child or the youngest child under three, 63% had the mother as the primary caregiver, while 32% had the grandparents playing that role. The percentage of families in which the father was the primary giver was exceedingly low. So if you do the math, it's only 5%. So for me, personally, I was taken care of by my grandparents, I think up to the age of three. And then when I go to kindergarten, my mom start taking care of me, like because like there is a transition for my mom to kind of quit her job, etc. And then my mom become a full-time housewife, basically. Yeah, so you can see this difference very sparkly.
No, it's a tale as old as time, unfortunately.
I know. Yeah, the unequal employment is problematic, as you might can see, like,
yes,
from these statistics already. And it's another thing that is like quite problematic, that if you don't know about the context, you might not be able to aware, is that China have this employment-based social protection. So China provide employment-based social insurance coverage. So that means this protection would exclude women who are not or other people who are no longer in the formal labor market. If they are not in the formal labor market, then they don't have these like social insurance coverage anymore. And then it will also affect their pension, the amount of the pension, and also like when could they receive these pension, basically. And as a result, fewer women are given full social protection and might experience more poverty. So it is something that we could say is feminization of poverty. And so if women are unemployed or in the informal labor market, if they are being housewives, they lose social protection and might experience more poverty. And that's an issue there.
Yeah, I think how you spoke about the feminization of poverty, that's so unintended consequence. I don't know if I want to use
that. Yeah, I would say it's unintended almost, because I don't think like the government would intentionally like undermine women and let them to be unemployed. And then
we will discuss this a little bit more later on, but I think that's why a gender lens is so important when we're talking about policy, because the fact that you could have an unintended consequence that would affect such a large part of the population, because when we're saying feminization of poverty, we are talking about 50% of the population going into poverty. So if that was an unintended consequence of a policy, then there needed to be a little bit more thought.
That needs to be addressed. I just want to say, even though I didn't plan to, but you know, they're like the government representation is so heavily dominated by male. And then I think in 2022 or something, like the National Congress, like the decision making body, it's the first time that I don't know, like for a while, that there aren't any female politician in the policy making body. So basically women is like are losing their voices like even more. That's probably why didn't they consider this issues.
100%. I mean, that's already like that's the problem right there, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And then, well, I would say like it's just a very obvious problem, and then Chinese women are totally aware of what does this policy mean to them. Yeah. And that comes to why that three child policy might not be effective, because this unequal child care responsibility and the detrimental impact on their careers. Chinese women, they demonstrate very little interest in having more children or even having one children, you know. According to a 2022 online survey of professional women, only 0.8% of women wanted to have three children. And even though it's kind of intuitive that how there is a significant difference between men and women when it comes to the issue of the ideal number of children in a family. So there is a survey that asked about this, and among all male respondents in that survey, those who want to have three children accounted for 15.6%, to be quite precise, of all men surveyed. And compared to the woman, only 7.2% of women, so almost twice of as high. So like men want more children, but women don't. Imagine if they are a couple or they are in a relationship, then they will get into a lot of conflict, and then the man would not understand, like, why wouldn't you like sacrifice, you know, like for our family. And then women, I think now Chinese young women is they're kind of, they understand this traditional what kind of restrained them from their self-development, and then they kind of become more feminist, I would say. And then, no, then if you want me to have more children and then get married with you and have more children, then I will just, we can just break up. I can stay single.
That's,
you know,
That's another unintended consequence, maybe, but that's not one we're complaining about at all.
Yeah. And yes.
Also, I'm sorry. Before you go on, I'm just going to mention for our listeners, because you've been giving us so many numbers, which is great. We're going to have a link to the surveys and the studies that Doris is mentioning in our description, so that if our listeners want to refer to any of that, they can go ahead and do that as well.
Friendly note that some of the links, they are in Chinese, so maybe you need to use Google Translate if you are really interested.
Exactly. If you are really interested, I trust you will make the effort.
Yes. Okay, let me continue.
Yes, please.
Despite, I would say, the absence of overt protest or movements, but many women, they quietly resist the policy and the traditional norms by kind of deferring the marriage and rejecting to give birth. I know there is an increase in divorce rate as well. I don't know if that is like anything related to that. Probably it could be a factor. So women are like,
unintended consequences.
Yes, and that government is getting like very frustrated, like, I want you to have baby, but you are getting divorced now, then how could you? Oh, but actually, one interesting fact that I would say, before, if they give birth to a children, it needs to, this child needs to have like both dad and mom. So it's a married couple that they can give it a register, but now they kind of change it. Single mother that could also register for their children. So So I feel like they kind of encourage single mother either, but I think it would be super problematic, because one, maybe in the best scenario, it's a like divorced single mother, but imagine other scenario, if that girl is raped or something, then they could be registered as well. Like, it's good that they don't need to marry the man who raped them, I guess.
Of course.
But
yeah,
it's still like very problematic. And then that's my guess for the intention for that like policy change. But
yeah.
All of them are my guesses. And then, yeah, that's why I feel like the policy intervention, like three child policy, is not going to be successful. And then kind of linked it back to what I've learned. Theoretically, I would say policy intervention. They don't follow a top-down linear trajectory. It's not like government say something and then the civil society, like the public, just respond accordingly. Yeah. They do what they are told, but instead every social actors have some sort of agency, and then they can have their response and will affect the result of the policy. Yeah,
that's very well put, and it's very interesting to hear you talk about both the pros and the cons of the policy. But something that I was thinking about while you were talking was, since because there's been a one-child policy, there's been a two-child policy, and there's a three-child policy now. So do you think that this has impacted generational attitudes about childbearing and child-rearing, especially because you were just talking a little bit about gender and how the policy has affected women? So I guess there is also the fact that, I don't want to say it's easier or more acceptable to get a divorce or to decide to not have a child, because I'm sure that the women who are making those decisions are facing the consequences of those decisions. But there is definitely a lot more space to make those decisions today. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, you see a policy like this come into play, and like you said, you see women actively opting out of the marriage market, out of the motherhood market, yeah. Can I call it? I don't know. But yeah, so do you think that the policy has, how has it impacted generational attitudes? Hello to our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of So We Heard. We ended up recording for way longer than expected, so we have decided to release this episode in two parts. This is the end of part one, and I hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with part two, so make sure you stay tuned, because we have so much from this conversation we cannot wait to share with you. Thank you so much for tuning in to So We Heard. This is your host, Ragini, signing off and going to overhear some interesting conversation to bring back to you. Bye-bye. A special thanks to the LSE Department of International Development and the LSE Volunteer Center for all their support in not only the production and promotion of this episode, but also with expanding our team. We would not be able to reach all of you if it wasn't for their platform. Thank you, LSE. This episode was produced by Ragini Puri and researched by Doris Huang.